Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. So, Paris and Charlie Hebdo. It's hard to know where to start. It's hard to know where to finish. It's hard to know what to include, since these religious assassinations just about included absolutely everything that was going on. historically, religiously, economically, you know, it's a difficult subject to approach. I mean, the first thing you have is overwhelming emotions, which is what seems to rule everything. The reason, rationality, filtering things through the intellect or through some kind of calm, decent view of humanity doesn't seem to really work anymore. It's what everybody aimed for, I guess, but I'm not sure if that's what's going on. Well, first, let me read you newspaper article. Hold on 1 second. Is this door closed? Yeah, because I'm getting a lot of leaks. Yeah, good. Okay, thanks. We're having a lot of sound leaks into the studio today. I have no idea why. Anyhow, back to what we're talking about. here's an article from Saturday, just a part of an article from Saturday's newspaper. Saudis begin public caning to punish a blogger. The authorities in Saudi Arabia on Friday began the public flogging of a blogger who was sentenced to 1,000 blows. 1,000. 10 years in prison and a large fine for starting a website that featured content critical of the country's religious establishment. The rights group Amnesty International reported the floggings are to be administered with a cane over a period of months, 1,000. The blogger, Raif Badawi, was arrested after starting a website called Free Saudi Liberals, and he was later convicted of charges that included cybercrime and parental disobedience. Parental disobedience. Talk about taking the Ten Commandments literally, right? The case has has drawn attention to the strict limits on freedom of expression in Saudi Arabia, a close Arab ally of the United States, and prompted unusually direct criticism from the American government. Unusually direct criticism, absolutely, yeah. You notice in the paper there were, or on TV or the net or whatever it is, wherever you get your information, that there were several million people, maybe anywhere between 2 and 4 million people who came out in France and close to 2 million people who showed up in Paris, which is astounding if you multiply the figures for the American population, adjusted for, you know, the difference in population. Talking about maybe 8 million people showed up in Paris. It would be like 8 million people showing up in New York City or Washington, 8 million, right? So all these people showed up, and there were heads of state from 40 countries, including Israel and the Palestinian Authority, Abbas from the Palestinian Authority, Netanyahu, and then the European leaders, Merkel, and everyone else was there. Well, not everyone, but most everyone was there. There was no representative from the United States of America. How could that be? Why would that be? Why would there be no representative from the United States of America whose constitution is predicated, whose Declaration of Independence and Constitution is predicated on free speech and equality? You know, where was anybody? The only article I saw was that Eric Holder was in Paris on business, but he didn't attend the ceremony. So it's a bad thing when people from our country don't show up to publicly condemn that. And what is the reason for that? We can only wonder what the reason for that is. So you've all heard about this. You've read about it. You've seen things about it. This magazine, it's not a magazine, this newspaper, Charlie Hebdo, was a satirical, or is, I don't know if it was is appropriate now. I don't know how they're going to continue, but I suppose they will, is a satirical magazine. And it's hard for me to, I've never read it, so I don't know how to compare it. But they say that the satire and the ridicule that they use, which is an old French tradition, goes all the way back to Voltaire, Daumier, other people I could mention, is vicious. And it is really, it goes for the jugular, this kind of stuff. Sometimes and often, if you want to draw a line someplace, they interviewed various cartoonists in the world, it crosses the line. Wherever that line is for you, whatever that line may be, if there is an actual line someplace, it crosses the line. They don't worry about bad taste. They don't worry about bad taste. If you've ever seen the worst satire and ridicule in the United States is nothing, generally, is nothing compared to what newspaper published. Obviously, I'm asking a rhetorical question here. Does it deserve to have its staff murdered? Well, of course not. Of course not. What happened there, like I say, it's so. Well, first of all, what did they publish? I mean, I'm sure everybody knows by now. Cartoons of Mohammed, the Prophet Mohammed, who is, I don't know if you can make comparisons, but there is God in the Abrahamic religions, God, Allah, Yahweh, God in the Christian religion. And maybe if you take a step down, it's hard to make these vast sweeping comparisons, but you get Moses and you get the Prophet Muhammad, without whom the Quran would not have been written, because it was given to him by, I think it was angels sent to him when he was in a cave. And Moses brought down the Ten Commandments. So Muhammad. So they published cartoons first thing they did was back in 2006 in Denmark, some cartoons were also ridiculing Mohammed were published, and Charlie Hebdo republished these. And somebody launched a rocket-propelled grenade at the offices of Charlie Hebdo for republishing these cartoons. The ones they published on their own, I don't know what the original Danish ones were, and I remember seeing them, but it was many years ago. And I didn't see the ones that Charlie Hebdo published, but they were of Muhammad, the Prophet Muhammad, naked and engaged in sexual acts. How that is, what that achieves, or how that is, how that works in terms of achieving a goal of ridiculing the larger faults of religion itself, or maybe that particular religion, I really don't know. I mean, what would be achieved by having Jesus naked and engaging in sexual acts? I really don't know. Or Moses, hard to say. But in 2006, when these cartoons were published in a Danish magazine or newspaper, hundreds of thousands, several hundred thousand Muslims marched and rioted all over the world in many Muslim countries. And in some European countries, people were killed, things were set on fire. It was, it was an incredible reaction. And I think what's important to remember when you hear this, and I'm going to talk a lot of, maybe I'll talk about religion. Obviously, you have to talk about religion in a case like this, and you have to talk about how far you take things when you go after people, when you're after their religion. I mean, is there no limit to? I mean, you know, is there? Am I a free speech absolutist? Probably not. Probably not. I think I draw the line at slander and libel. Vicious slander and libel. And sometimes the temptation is tremendous. When you have people, when you have an organization like the Roman Catholic Church, or you have the, or you have people like Dick Cheney or Richard Nixon or George Bush or anybody, when you have people who are in power, who have tremendous power and abuse that power, as most people in power do, but people who really abuse that power and, you know, ruin thousands, tens of thousands, millions of people's lives by abusing that power, then those people, it seems to me, sacrifice any protection whatsoever from being attacked in any way whatsoever. Now, you could also say there's a limit to that, too, but that depends where you live. It depends what country you're living in. People in this country, when George Bush was doing his outrageous things, and Cheney was doing these outrageous things, one thing people didn't do was attack his children. You know, they didn't go after his children. I suppose some people did, but very few people would do a thing like that in this country. I don't know where the line is drawn in various different countries. But when something like this happens, you're talking about it involves politics, obviously. It involves religion, clearly. But it involves economics. It involves racism. Ethnicity, it involves religion. I mean, the people in France, the Muslims in France, a lot of the Muslims from France are from North Africa. And they, you're talking about a kind of political karma here, just a karma in general. France and Algeria and the Middle East, Pakistan and Afghanistan, all these colonial countries, these colonial empires, occupied and raped and looted and stole for hundreds of years, all over Africa, the Middle East and the Far East and the Near East. And people think, you know, think of the Crusades, too. Think of the Crusades and think of all the governments in the 18th century, the 19th century, and even into the 20th century, straight up until the 60s in France and Algeria. To these two of the brothers who were killed, the two brothers who went into the Charlie Hebdo office and killed people, a couple of security guards and cops, and several, was it something like 9 or 10 staffers, cartoonists and other staffers. They knew who they were after, I think. They came from Algeria, apparently. There's a kind of, and the way France behaved in Algeria is monstrous. and the way a lot of colonial powers behaved in all over the world, France and Vietnam, France anywhere, the Dutch, the Portuguese, the Belgians in the Congo, the British in various places weren't quite as bad. But some of these countries, they obviously felt that these people were, first of all, they weren't Christians, as the European countries were. So they were beneath contempt. They weren't even quite human. And they weren't white, which makes them also not human and beneath contempt. And they were treated like this for hundreds of years. And a lot of the craziness and the turmoil and the violence you see in the Middle East, it's not all explained by that, but a lot of it comes from that. And there's a lot of revenge that's been cooking from multiple generations. There's a lot of karmic blowback going on here. The wheel is turning. And like I say, you can't explain this kind of stuff, and you certainly can't excuse it, but you could understand it. You could understand it. A lot of these people who are from countries that are still poor and still busted apart and still have no center and still have to deal with dictatorships. And I said part of that is due to their religion and their own, before the Europeans arrived, there were tribal wars going on in these places anyhow, and kings and murders and kidnappings and mass, rapes. These things existed before the Europeans showed up in all these places. Can't blame everything on the Europeans, but there's a lot that the Europeans have to answer for. And I think in one way, and I know I'm going to say a lot of things today that are that people will find offensive or upsetting or outrageous. Well, that's fine. If you want to get in touch with me about anything I say today, go to FederFiles, FederFiles.com, FederFiles. FIles.com, and it's Fader Files, one word. There will be a place where you can contact me there, and I'll be glad to hear any responses you have. What I'm going to say today is really mostly emotional responses, questions I have in my own mind, comments. I think things that some people feel, some people might consider universal questions and comments, and fears and angers. And others that might be just my own opinion. And I want to remind everybody that this is always just my own opinion. There is always this kind of history that you have to deal with. And a lot of the Muslims from Northern Africa and from Middle Eastern countries that live in European countries, and you see there's a reaction to them from all over the place. In Germany, I think it was several days ago, like about a week ago, there was a large demonstration of people who are right-wingers. There are neo-Nazi groups springing up all over, especially in, of all places, Germany. Neo-Nazi groups, the right wing in France is a tremendously powerful party. It's the second most powerful party in France, and could easily, during the next elections, or if another election is called, because Hollande, if that's how you say his name, the leader of France right now, is considered to be a very weak leader and not a very good leader. People are poor. There's high unemployment in France. There is a bad economic situation in France, like in most other places in the world right now, and especially in Europe. And a lot of the blame is placed on the leaders, as always. Marie Le Pen, and I forget the name of the party, but she is the daughter of a man named obviously Le Pen, L-E-P-E-N. They're the head of an extreme right-wing party. And no matter how extreme it is or conservative it is, and they are anti-immigrant and probably very much anti-Muslim, because a lot of the immigrants are Muslims from French parts of Africa and from the Middle East. The right-wing party, Le Pen, who's in charge of it, they could easily wind up being in charge of the government there. And Europeans have an old history of this. Think of the Nazis in World War II and Vichy France and other governments like that in Eastern and Central Europe. So all over Europe, in France and in Germany, especially in France, there is a tremendous reaction to all the immigrants that have come in over the last many decades, especially from Muslim countries. And a lot of the ghettos in France and in Germany, and even social welfare states like Sweden and Denmark are having reactions. People in places where people are, where people desperately try to consider other people with decency and equality. There is a tremendous number of Muslim immigrants and African immigrants, some of whom are Muslim, who are taxing the social welfare states, the ability of places like, you know, France and Germany and Denmark and Sweden to deal with this situation, even economically. And a lot of the slums, a lot of the poor housing, a lot of the poverty is in Muslim neighborhoods. And so that's something you look at when you see something like this, is crime anywhere, violent crime anywhere is usually, you know, street crime, vicious crimes like this, although we'll get to the religious dimension, are usually committed by people who have grown up in poverty, people who have been poor and maltreated and racially, you know, and ethnically and religiously held in contempt and treated first with laws against them, and secondly as second-class, third-class, fourth-class citizens in a lot of these countries, insults yelled at them, you know, and they tend to react, obviously. And the Jews always had this problem, obviously, going back, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in European countries. And since they didn't have a tradition of orchestrated, concentrated violence, they didn't have a violent reaction all the time. They usually hung together and took whatever, you know, crap was dealt out to them. If they were attacked, they lived in ghettos. They stayed in their ghettos. They didn't fight back. It was very rare that the Jews fought back, which is another whole complicated story. That's another whole thing to talk about. But just to say that there's a lot of history involved here that has to be looked at, and a lot of economics and a lot of racism and a lot of religious intolerance on the part of white Christian Europe. And, you know, there is a revenge to be dealt with here. There is revenge to be dealt with here. As far as the the attack on Charlie Hebdo, the apparently, when these two men went in there, their brothers, when they went in there with their AK-47s and started murdering everybody, it was clearly in response to the publication of these cartoons. If Charlie Hebdo had never published they published cartoons, by the way. Charlie Hebdo was an equal opportunity offender. They were they published cartoons ridiculing in the most vicious way, and articles and cartoons satirizing the Catholic Church. I don't know if they ever did that with the Jews, because France has a kind of even a magazine, even a newspaper like that has to be a little hesitant, like it would be in Germany. In Germany, it's against the law to do that. But since they have such a shameful record in the 30s and 40s, the French, when it came to the Jews, they probably, even a newspaper like that is hesitant to publish something like that. But they did not hesitate to publish this. These cartoons, first they republished the Danish ones from 2006, which outraged a lot of Muslims, obviously. And then they published their own in 2012. And like I say, I haven't seen them. If I wanted to, I'm sure I could go on the internet and see it. Is there anything that's not on the internet? I mean, I probably eventually will go and look at it, but I have a pretty good idea. And I think I saw one someplace when I was sort of surfing around through the internet on the weekend. But so this was published, and these men decided to take revenge, and they went in there and murdered as many of the staff as I guess they could get their hands on, or as many as they could, many as they could shoot in a short while and try to get away. And they yelled, "God is great," in Arabic. God is great. Really? God is great? What's so great about a God that has ordered some imam somewhere or some religious leader or some independent group of people like these brothers or maybe a religious leader who ordered these brothers or suggested to them that if they wanted to get to paradise and they wanted to avenge the Prophet Muhammad against the infidels and the unbelievers, what they should do is slaughter as many people as possible. And you see this all over the world right now. Is it politically incorrect to be picking on Muslims right now? No, it's just a fact. It's just a fact. There's been plenty of times, and there are more subtle ways that white Christian countries are terrorizing other countries right now. And there's plenty of terror in the world to go around. In Gaza now, there are tremendous storms in the Middle East. Very unusual, cold, rainy weather. Very bad winter storms in the Middle East. And who's suffering the most, apparently, are people in Gaza, because the Israelis went in there in response to, you know, they say to rockets, and I'm sure it's true enough, to rockets constantly launched by Hamas into Israel. And they just couldn't deal with it, couldn't stand it anymore. So, and then there were, you know, there'd been assassinations. And so the Israelis went in there. They sent their army in there. And they blew up and blew apart with artillery and bombs and maybe a couple of thousand buildings. A lot of them were residential buildings. So who's suffering are, and people are dying now. Children are dying. Older people are dying. People are dying from exposure to the cold because they don't have a roof on their building because the Israelis blew them up. They blew up the buildings, and they have no real infrastructure. I mean, hospitals were damaged, residential buildings, apartment buildings were damaged, houses were damaged, and people are exposed to the cold and dying. I can't say the word would be unnecessarily. Certainly it's unnecessarily, but dying more than they would be if they were protected by buildings that hadn't been destroyed. This is something that's been going on. And the over in Saudi Arabia, they're publicly caning somebody 1,000 blows for criticizing the religious establishment in Saudi Arabia. This is going on all the time. So these guys are yelling, God is great. God is great. What God is that? I know a guy who's a car service driver. A couple of times I've taken car service to go places in the last couple of months, and I always ask for this driver because he's the best driver this place has. You know, I've tried different drivers and over the last several months, actually, because I have so many medical appointments I have to go to, and sometimes I can't use the bus or the train. In fact, I can't use the bus or the train at all. So I do have to take these car services and taxis, and that's a whole complicated thing. Talk about savings and reimbursement. So in any case, one of them that I always ask for, if I can find him, is a guy who's from Palestine, because he's the best driver they have. He can get someplace faster. He's a smooth driver. He's decent. He shows up on time. And he's a really nice guy. We've had conversations about him, a million things. He's had tragedy in his life. He left Palestine because he couldn't stand to live there anymore. There was nothing to do. He and his family were starving. He came over here. Much like many of the immigrants, the Jewish immigrants from my family from the turn of the 19th and 20th century, came over here because there was nothing for them to do, and they were being attacked all the time. And there was religious intolerance, there were wars, there were pogroms. So they came over here to have some freedom from this, from the violence and the crime, and they came over here. And so he brought, and they worked and worked, and then they sent for their families when they piled up enough money to pay for the passage over here. And same thing with this guy. It's he came from Palestine and he brought his cousins, his brothers and his cousins and everybody he could think to bring over here. And they have a fairly decent life. They work hard. They work like dogs, 6 days a week. And they make money. And we were once having a conversation about this, about that, about the other thing. And I asked him, we started having a religious conversation. He wanted to know if I was religious. He knew I was Jewish. He wanted to know if I was religious. And I said no. And he doesn't make comments on people's lives. He knows better than that. And I asked him, well, you're religious, right? And he said yes. And then he described what would happen when he died. And It was the paradise that you hear about, that people have ridiculed, and I've ridiculed it too on the air here for various reasons, where when you die, when he dies, I guess when a man dies, I don't know what happens when women die if they're religious Muslims, but when a man, a religious Muslim dies, if he's been good, there's different ways that you can do this, but if he's been good is one way. You go to paradise. And sure enough, he was talking about you have everything you want forever. And there will be the virgins there, right? And there will be the grapes on the trees. And you will be rewarded forever. But in this case, he's saying that what you have to... So I said, what do you have to do to get this reward? And he said, do good deeds as much as possible every day to help people. You help your family, you help strangers, you help other people. And that's what this guy's like. He is a terrific human being. And I know other people in other religions who take that part of the religion seriously. Jews, Christians, Buddhists do good to other people. Now, they don't necessarily do it because they expect a reward. In this case, this is kind of a primitive way of looking at it. This is a reward. It's almost like a childish way of looking at it. If you're really good, if you're really, really good, Joshy, then you can have candy if you want later. You can watch all the TV shows you want. All these things you can have. He believes that. But thank God, at least. And he said he never criticizes or gets into conversations about the violence that goes on, about suicide bombers, you know, people blowing up 132 people, children, shooting 132 children in a school in Pakistan. All these violence, all the violence, all the rockets. But he did say that he did get a little angry one time about the Israelis when they went into Gaza. And he, but it's good deeds. That's the deal. And I know religious Jews and I know religious Christians who feel that good deeds not necessarily are done to get them into heaven, because it's what you do. It's what you do for other people. And I always wonder what God's got to do with it. I mean, do you need God, or do you need a holy book? Do you need the Bible? Do you need the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Quran to help other people, to be good to other people, to love other people? God knows that's what we should all be doing all the time, right? In the most personal way, you get something out of it yourself, and also it's for other people. I mean, what are we here for? What on earth are we here for? To murder other people, to steal from them? Apparently, a lot of people feel that way. To exact revenge, to get out our hatred on people. Now, easy to say, right? For somebody like me, who was brought up in a way that, and still to this day, which I try to purge myself of in various ways, brought up in a way where I have a lot of vengeful feelings and a lot of hateful feelings. And sometimes it's come out in violence in my life, not religious violence. But, you know, if somebody crossed me or somebody did something unjust to me, I didn't react in just a verbal way, put it that way. But that's going back now. You know, now I'm an old guy. I would never do that. But am I more mellow now than I'm? Well, somewhat more mellow. But anyhow, these guys are yelling, God is great. God is great. And so my friend, the car driver here, he says if he does good deeds all the time, and basically he was expanding this. He said if a Muslim, and I guess he means a Muslim man, does good deeds all the time, God is watching you, right? Allah is watching you, I guess. And they know, you know, just like the Christians, religious Christians, some of them will say, records are being kept. You know, you're being watched, like by the NSA. There's records being kept of what you do. You better watch out. They know if you're naughty or nice. They know this. And if you do bad, in your life, there will be retribution in the next life. You may go to the other place. You may not go to heaven and fly around and be in the presence of God. And, you know, I'm being somewhat satirical, and I'm ridiculing religion here a little bit. And only because I feel sometimes that people who are devoutly religious, even if it propels them to do good deeds, and I'm glad it does, I feel that they don't need God to do good deeds. These people are good people anyhow. They have understood without the religious teaching. I don't think they needed the religious teaching. This guy I'm talking about didn't need to be taught that he should be good to other people and that he would have a reward. He just believes there's going to be this particular reward in the next world. And I don't think that's the main reason he's doing it, but who knows? Maybe he, you know, understands, or maybe he believes because he was taught, just like a lot of Christians are believe this, especially Catholics, unfortunately, that there is a heaven or a hell, and you'll either burn forever or you will be near the throne of God, I suppose. But there's something about these people who came, who come from the Muslim religion these days. People always say the radicals and the fringe, the fringe fundamentalists, the radical Islam extremists. Yes, that's true. You know that there are a billion or a billion and a half Muslims in the world. And there is an infinitesimal, almost unmeasurably infinitesimal minority of them that act in this way. And yet there is clearly, there are theocracies, the worst theocracies that are remaining in the world, religious states, are the Muslim theocracies, like the Taliban when they were running Afghanistan, like Saudi Arabia, like in Iran right now. These are the leftover theocracies. Used to be the Europeans had Christian theocracies, and a lot of people came to this country hundreds of years ago, and not even hundreds of years ago, to get away from this. When the church and the state are merged together, there's nothing but trouble, because they will start to tell you what is right and wrong. In Saudi Arabia, they flogged this guy for religious disobedience and for being disobedient to his parents, because it's all the same thing. It's all to keep people in line. It's all to keep people in line. Now, the people who yell God is great, apparently, and I don't understand this too much, but you do hear that if you die in the service, if you're a martyr and you blow yourself up, or you kill other people in the service of God, of Allah, you go straight to paradise. I don't know if there's different levels of paradise. Are there more virgins? Are there more grapes or better grapes? If you do good deeds, like my friend, the car driver, you get to go to paradise. But he has to wait till he dies. He has to wait till he dies. Apparently, if you die at the age of 21 or 34, or whatever age these guys were, you go straight there. You don't have to pass go. You don't have to do anything. You go straight there. So some people must be in a hurry to get to paradise. I mean, maybe because of internal pressure or emotional disturbance or poverty or hatred that is drilled into them. There are thousands and thousands of elementary and upper, like junior high school equivalents and high school equivalents, funded Muslim elementary schools, Islamic elementary and junior high schools, funded by the Saudis mainly, all over the world, in various countries, mostly in Islamic Muslim countries. And they teach a very rigid, harsh kind of Islam. And one thing they teach, and because the Saudis are a brand of Sunni that is extremely, I think it's Wahhabi, but they are extremely harsh and extremely rigid and extremely paternal. And vengeance is part of, and giving your life in the service, not necessarily in good deeds, but giving your life in the service of Allah is taught into children for generations, funded by the Saudis all over the Muslim world. There are millions and millions and millions, tens of millions of children being educated in these schools. And one thing they are taught in a lot of these schools, especially the ones in the Middle East, is funded by the Saudis, are that the Jews are the devil. The Jews are the devil. You notice that one of these terrorists found, of all things, how many grocery stores are there in Paris? But he found a Jewish grocery store, right? And how many Jews are there in Paris? I don't know. You know, maybe there's 100,000 or something out of a city of several million. And it used to be more, but, you know, the Nazis and the collaborationists in France took care of that. But this guy goes into a Jewish grocery store and deliberately kills Jews. There's something about, I don't know what it is, there's something about these religions. Joseph Campbell got in trouble for this once because he was considered to be anti-Semitic. He said there's something about, I think he called it the Semitic religions, the religions that come from the Middle East, that's so crazy and so harsh and vindictive that it's hard to understand. Maybe it's the desert. Maybe it's all those rocks and the heat and the harshness. But it's a harsh land, and it breeds harsh people. The tribalism and the vindictiveness and the vengefulness. So they come up with a god, both of them, and a prophet and a god that is very warlike and very angry. In the Old Testament, God is seen as... you could see him however you want. I mean, my friend and other friends I have who are Orthodox Jews would, I'm sure, would get extremely angry at this point of view. But in the book of Joshua, when the Hebrews were on their way to the Promised Land and they were marching there after having escaped from Pharaoh, from Egypt, where they were slaves, anything and anybody that got in their way got the axe. Anybody. The Lord said, I'm taking you to the Promised Land. By the way, people already lived in the Promised Land, but, you know, so what? They're taking you to the Promised Land. And at one point, you know, they're marching. Joshua was the great general. At one point in the book of Joshua, I don't know if God said this to Joshua or to some other general, he said there was a town that was opposing them or a city that was opposing them. And the Lord said to his general, or to Joshua, maybe it was, he said, I want you to kill everything that breathes. Kill everything that breathes. And so they killed every man, woman, and child in the city that stood in their way. This is the kind of place we're talking about. This is the kind of place we're talking about. We're talking about a god, Yahweh, and a god, I guess, seen by different people in different ways. But in the Old Testament, this god is vengeful. He's... He chooses between believers and unbelievers. He wouldn't have the Jews, he wouldn't have the ancient Jews occupy the Holy Land if there was anybody who was an unbeliever in there. Sound familiar? And had them purge the entire place, chase everybody out or kill everybody so that the Promised Land belonged only to the Jews. This is not isolated now to the Muslims. And look at the Crusades. Onward Christian soldiers, God as the head general, God as the commander in chief. Why does God have to be this old, bearded, crazy, psychopathic, vengeful man? He still exists that way in many religions. He still exists that way in many religions. Well, it's not good enough for me. God spare me from that old-time religion. The old-time religion is something that's something we don't want. Yeah, I know. I know. In all the books, it says, be kind, be good to people. But sometimes I wonder about even the Ten Commandments. I know I said there would be things that would offend everybody today, and I'm sure that this scattershot approach, because I'm very emotional about the whole thing, and I haven't really thought out, whether or not I should be saying things, or am I tempering what I'm saying? I don't know. But I'm just sort of expressing feelings I have. But don't give me that old-time religion, unless it's an old-time religion like Buddhism, you know, where there is no big, crazy, vengeful God. I mean, this harsh, violent, thou shalt do whatever I say to do, or you're in a lot of trouble. You know, either you go to heaven or you go to hell. It's one thing or the other. When you look at the Ten Commandments, the first commandment should be, thou shalt not kill. The second commandment should be, thou shalt help everyone you can. The third commandment, thou shalt treat everyone equally and decently. The fourth commandment shall be, et cetera. You get the point. But the first commandment is, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt have no other God before me. And all the other stuff comes afterwards. The idea is to establish one big, heavy-handed, punishing, vengeful, paternal figure. And this is what the Jews got. This is what the ultra-Orthodox Jews are still preaching in Israel, where as far as they're concerned, the only good Arab or Palestinian is a dead Arab or Palestinian. This is what a lot of the last millennia, off and on, and even until people like George Bush talking about a crusade, a lot of fundamentalist Christians are believing and preaching about other religions. They're all going to go to hell. I had somebody tell me on the air once at another radio station who was the public relations director of the Creation Museum out in Missouri or wherever it is, that because I didn't believe in the Lord Jesus Christ as my Savior, as the Savior, that I was going to burn in hell. He said it in a very nice way. At the time, it was okay with me because it was during the wintertime and the heat had gone out of the studio. And I was thinking, well, any place that's warm, right? But he said, no, I'm going to burn in hell. This kind of, you know, extreme black and white, if you don't do what we say. And so this reaction, this constant suicide bombs and attacks on completely innocent people. People are attacking people within the... You know, people have done this forever. People attack people within the Christian religion, various sects of Christianity. They don't do it so violently now, or, you know, hardly violently at all. But, you know, history is replete. The history of Christianity is replete with mass torturings and wars and murders and crusades. The Crusaders killed everybody in their path. Now, you don't want to confuse that, too. A lot of the time, these religious wars are wars of empire. It's not just the colonial empires from Europe that we're talking about here. Some of these other empires go back way before that. The empire of Islam, you know, as led, from Muhammad's immediate followers, captured or conquered in great violence, by the way, and harshness. Huge parts of the Middle East and the Near East and Africa and, some parts of Europe. And there were, other empires, too, Christian empires that were that permitted slavery, that killed all kinds of people who were savages as far as they were concerned and treated them with contempt and violence and brutality. So it's not just isolated to Islam. But right now in the world at the time that we're talking about here and now, it is the people who are blowing other people up. These wars within things. You're either a Sunni or a Shiite. And if you're the wrong brand of Sunni or Shiite, if you don't worship the same exact descendant of somebody who 1,500 years ago said the wrong thing to somebody else or went off in a different direction. And to insult the Prophet Muhammad is not taken. I mean, if you really believe in God, sometimes I wonder if these people actually believe truly believe, and with a real faith, an abiding faith, the people who commit these violent acts, and as I say, they are a minority, a very small minority, but there's this tendency to react in this violent way. And some countries are run this way. Look at Saudi Arabia. Look at the way the Taliban ran Afghanistan. And there are, and look at the way Iran is run. I mean, it's run partially by the Revolutionary Guards who are in it for the money and the power. And it's run by Ayatollahs. It's run by a religious establishment. There was just a woman who escaped being stoned to death there. I don't know, maybe she was, but or I think she was let off. But this is what's going on. And this kind of harshness, this craziness, religion and government should not ever mix. That's what's one of the good things, at least idealistically, and the way it's worked out, too, about the United States. There is no theocracy that exists right now on Earth, except perhaps Israel, with all its flaws, that permits real equality. And even in Israel, they don't permit real equality and democracy. But there's more there for a theocratic state. It's a Jewish state, and yet they still don't automatically discriminate in violent, absolutely violent ways against somebody just because they're a different religion. There's a lot of second-class citizen treatment, kind of de facto and de jure, you know, which always has to be opposed. But there, you know, there are Palestinians in the or Arabs in the parliament, and people have rights there. But you can't mix this kind of harsh theocracy, as you see in a place like Saudi Arabia, with freedom of speech and with equality. In France, and part of the French Revolution was not just against a monarch, not just against a dictatorial, brutal, insane nobility. It was against the church, because in many places in South America and Central America, because they were taken over by Portugal and Spain, in Austria, in places where there was there's a lot of Catholic countries, in, especially in Austria and France, and parts of Germany, and in Russia too, but especially in those places in Western Europe, in Central Europe, it was the same as the nobility. The brutal dictatorships and the monarchies and nobility were the same people as the church, the princes of the church, the cardinals, you know, the bishops. They were the rich. They were the powerful. And you would get whipped to death, or you would get hung, or you would get your head chopped off just as fast being attacking the church as you would be to attack a king or a monarch or some other noble. So, you know, separation of church and state is really the important thing that we're talking about here. It has to be. Will there ever be a time when this kind of crazy religious violence stops? I don't know. It seems to me that if you look at the world, all over the world, it's getting worse. It's getting worse. Or maybe it just looks worse because these acts of violence are so graphic and so horrible that maybe they assume they take up all the space, and they take up all the space in your head too, so you assume it's getting worse. I don't know. I haven't done a statistical or quantitative analysis of whether things are getting worse. Is there more religious violence, or does it just seem that way because the religious violence is so concentrated and so horrible and so graphic and so viewable? You know, when ISIS cuts off somebody's head in Syria, or in some country, or Al Qaeda, you know, executes somebody when somebody is beheaded. Now it's on the internet, or it's in the newspapers, or something like that. So, you know, these kinds of things are not things that everybody used to see all the time. I guess the last thing I want to say is, And this is scattershot stuff here. A lot of stuff, somebody pointed out that a lot of stuff that goes on in a lot of the things like Charlie Hebdo published, you know, these kind of cartoons of Muhammad naked having sex acts, which is so offensive to people. In the United States, that would be considered hate speech. And if it happened on a campus, the newspaper would be shut down. The funding would be taken away. That kind of thing doesn't happen in this country. Why does it not happen in this country? Is there a sense that people shouldn't be offended so gratuitously? And that's what I'm talking about here is now is this, the idea of ridicule and satire. I mean, political cartoons have always been very, very important. There's nothing more powerful than an image. An image, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words, a picture's worth 100,000 words. The images we see so many images now all the time, and they have such a powerful effect. I don't know, like I said before, if you can measure if there's an increase in these things or whether it just seems worse because you see it more vividly than you ever saw it before and more often. It's in front of your eyes. But political cartooning and images, always political cartoons were a big thing. In this country, Thomas Nast in the 19th century published cartoons of Boss Tweed, made him look so ridiculous and so tyrannical. And in other countries, political cartooning, and in France especially, and in England, but especially in France, political cartooning and satire and ridicule are very, very, very important. That's why they shouldn't be censored. Extremely important in bringing about equality and democracy. And yet there's the flip side of that. In Nazi Germany, there were posters of cartoons of the Jews with, you know, devil's tails and big noses and rapacious-looking rat-like faces. So it can go either way. It can go either way. And these images go straight. They don't involve your brain. That's what's so powerful about images. They have nothing to do with rationality. They go straight into your heart and into your gut, and you have a violent reaction to it. You have a violent reaction to it. What we'd all like is what we see. I mean, this happened in the 60s, too. A place like BAI, where I used to work, radio station BAI in New York, and then on the left, and, you know, hippies and everybody, what they did was they used ridicule and satire to tremendous effect against Johnson, against Nixon, against the war in Vietnam, against people like George Wallace. Ridicule and satire are powerful, powerful weapons, and that's why they have to be, and they're part of free speech. If you don't have free speech, you can never have a democracy. You never have a free society. That's why so many millions of people turned out to support this magazine. The magazine itself, you know, do I support this kind of do it because you can do it, this kind of gratuitous frat boy, prankster Howard Stern kind of caca doo-doo stuff? I think it's stupid and offensive for no good reason. There's just no good reason for it. But why not meet it? And this is a sign of personal evolution and of maturity and of political maturity of a society and a culture and a political system. If you're presented with this kind of horrible ridicule, which does nobody any good, react with sadness or hold protests or react with pity or react with contempt. Or boycott them. But grown people have to learn. That's what we have to learn in our society here. Grown people have to learn not to respond to insults with violence. That's a sign of childishness and immaturity. And this is what you get in whole cultures now and in countries and people reacting this way. Also, you know, as I've gotten older, I don't believe in God. Or not some big old guy with a big beard and, a hammer in his hand. But people get comfort from religion. People get comfort from religion. Why ridicule this stuff for no particular good reason? Unless there's a larger purpose. Ridiculing the Catholic Church and the Vatican, that I can understand. Because of the organized religion has caused tremendous misery. Religion and the power of government has caused tremendous misery. But if it was my choice, I would never publish cartoons like this because there's no point. It just offends everybody. And yet, in the end, you have to have freedom of speech. No matter how awful it is, you don't react that way. You just don't react that way. It's a sign of growing up.
But sir, do you remember the very first book you ever read?
The first book. You don't forget the first book.
No.
Nah.
You remember what it was?
I was a child.
Yes.
It was a simple book in the ancient Hebrew. It was a book called Zechem Mochem Ruchem.
Yes. And that translates into?
See Moses Run.
Oh.
A little book. A beautiful little book.
Yes. Do you remember? Do you remember the story?
Well, it wasn't a big, you know, complicated story. Well, but it was a page-turner.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Now, can you remember?
Well, see, first, the first thing was a picture of Moses underneath that said, "See Moses." Okay, turn the page. Then it was a picture of the Pharaoh. It said, "See Pharaoh." Yeah, turn the page. Then it said, "See Moses run." Then a picture of God. Then a picture of God throws the stick. The next one, Moses catches the stick. The next page, the stick turns into a snake. The next page, see Pharaoh run.
Ah. That's
yeah. And the last page, see God laugh.
Yeah. That sounds like a lovely book. That lovely book. Sir, speaking of the good book, did you know the original writers of any of the people?
I knew the head writer of the Bible.
Really?
He lived two caves away.
What about Moses and the Red Sea? Was that a true story?
He didn't part anything.
Moses didn't part the
Red Sea? No, sir. Didn't even part his hair if you saw a picture.
Now, wait a second. You're telling me now, categorically, it's not the truth.
You have some kind of paranoid thing with the truth. Everything got to be with the truth. You're always like, we do these records together. You chase me in the corner for the truth.
Yes, well.
The truth. Everything must be the truth.
But because you've lived so long, you could tell us what the truth
is. If I told you the truth, you couldn't handle the truth.
I could handle it. This is important for people.
All right, let's see.
Yes.
You want to know the truth?
Yes.
Moses wasn't even a Jew.
What?
Moses was an Egyptian.
Oh, wait. Just a moment.
You're trembling, you're shaking, you're stuttering. You can't handle the truth.
But it's not the truth.
Well, it isn't the truth. It's true. He was a Jew, not an Egyptian. That was a rumor.
So why did you...
I wanted to test to see if you could handle the truth.
Sir, I'd like your thoughts about the effects of the Ten Commandments on civilization.
There were more.
More what?
There were more commandments.
Really?
They weren't important.
Would you tell us what they are?
One of them was, thou shalt not squint.
No, that's it.
Where's the big...
No, no.
Where's the big message?
Yeah, yeah.
Where's the big message?
Sir, you lived, of course, during the time of Christ.
Oh, I knew him. A nice boy.
You knew Jesus?
Oh, he's a nice, lovely, thin. A nice little boy.
I mean, is he...
He wore sandals.
He wore sandals. Very much as he's pictured today in the motion pictures that we see of him.
Well, they made a travesty of it.
You mean that Jesus Christ...
They're throwing over the tables and knocking over things.
Well, didn't Jesus behave that
way? No, he was quiet, a quiet lad.
He didn't do that?
No, he came in the store. He never bought anything.
You had a store?
Yes, yes.
Oh, I see. You were a merchant. By the way, did you know any of the apostles? Did you know the 12?
I knew them all, sure.
Did
I
you know
them.
The 12 apostles?
They came to the store. I knew them well.
Oh,
sure.
You knew them, huh?
Absolutely.
Could you tell us a little about them? Who are they?
There was Ben, Murray, Al, Richie, Saul, Abe.
No. Wait. That's not the apostles.
Oh, wait, that's the William Morris Agency. Wait.
No, that's the same stuff. Sir, is there anything you want to tell us about Jesus that we don't know, that we should know? Because the history and the mystery of Jesus is really one of the most fascinating things in the history of man.
He was a carpenter.
We know that.
Oh, that's all I had left.
Well, everybody knew. Yeah. So there's nothing new you can...
Yeah.
No new
life. I thought I'd shed that new life, but you all
was
know
Was he a
that.
Good carpenter?
The best.
Did he ever do anything for you?
Yes, he made a cabinet for me.
Really?
Yes.
What kind of a cabinet?
Three drawers and two little drawers at the top.
Yes.
Yes.
And how much did he charge you for that?
4 drachmas.
How much is a drachma?
Drachma's about a half a buck today.
Did you know at the time that Jesus was building you this cabinet?
Oh, sure. I paid him. I wrote a check to Jesus.
No,
I knew it.
No, I mean, did you know he was going to be the Jesus who would shake the world?
Are you kidding? If I knew it was going to be him, I would have made him a partner in the store. Who knew it was going to be a hit?
Sir,